This is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers. Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
Le'Veon Bell wants to be paid as an offensive weapon, when if you're the Steelers, he's come across as a bit of a weapon himself in different ways.
And Adam Nathan.
It's tricky because Hugh Jackson said nothing for me to shove him in.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Go Hawks.
The 2018 season, regular season, is rolling down and the Seahawks are sitting pretty, making probable plans for January. Welcome to another episode of the Pedestrian Podcast, still the one, only, unofficial UK Seahawkers podcast. Myself this week, Stuart Court, is joined by a man who's just back from painting Barcelona white. How are we, sir? Adam Nathan?
Very well. It's been a good week for sports teams so far, and long may that continue.
Yeah, did you notice how I said white and not red, because I know your distaste for that colour?
I wouldn't have even... I probably would have hung up if you said red, to be honest, because you'd have meant nothing to me, let's be honest.
Yeah. So have you been finding... then, like, you got any relation to Lucas Moura over the last 48 hours or so?
we're all one big family. There's nothing to... we don't need to force it.
So this week we will talk about Monday Night Football, and then obviously briefly mentioned the Week 15 game down in Santa Clara in the Bay against San Francisco 49ers. Obviously, not much has been changed from the last time we played them, apart from they beat the Broncos last Sunday. But on Monday Night Football, the Seahawks against the Minnesota Vikings in what was 5th seed against 6th seed, but the gap between the two teams for the most part looked a bit wider than that, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I've not been able to watch kind of the game in its entirety with all the replays and whatever, but having seen most of the plays, like the Vikings just are what we thought they were going to be last week. Yeah. They're just fine. I mean, we've talked a lot about teams like Carolina and the Rams and even the Packers, like, who we respect. I just have no respect for a team led by Kirk Cousins. And as a result, I think that's kind of just what they are. I mean, I'm just looking again at their touchdown. I don't know how that stood, because he looks like he's clearly over the line of scrimmage. They're just like, I don't know. They are Kirk Cousins, and he is just vanilla, beige, boring.
Yeah. They're a team who were a game away from reaching the Super Bowl, and they decided in the off season to go get the fancy name for offensive coordinator and the big banner quarterback free agency signing as well, even though technically their quarterback probably was as equally adept last year than Kirk Cousins was, and they just neither have worked. They fired DeFilippo, whatever his name is, after the game on Monday, which is no surprise to anyone. It just did not seem that the coach and OC were as in sync, which is something which we kind of berated and now kind of appraising, which is what happens in Seattle. It's kind of lockstep all the way with Schottenheim and Carroll. It was complete chalk and cheese with Zimmer and his OC in Minnesota, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I put this one on Mike Zimmer, to be honest. They're not a good rushing team, and Zimmer wants them to rush more. Yeah. Now, that doesn't make any sense. And to be honest, I think DeFilippo might be better off without working under Mike Zimmer, although it's a bit of a throwing someone under the bus to fire them with 3 games to go.
Yeah, definitely. On Monday night, Davin Cook had 13 inches, which is 55 yards. That's the only running back they really tried. Latavius Murray, 3 rushes for 4. It was a pretty damn impressive defensive performance. Obviously, we'll talk more about 54 in a bit, but Shaquille Griffin and Trey Flowers and Justin Coleman obviously had the fumble Ruski 6. Which sealed the game late in the fourth quarter. This was an old-school, old heyday Seahawks defensive performance on the big stage, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was serious lockdown. The atmosphere looked amazing. And we just had looked quicker, looked more physical. Kirk's passes, you know, every time there was a pass, it looked like one of our cornerbacks had made a jump on it already. They just knew what they were doing. And again, Ken Norton deserves a huge amount of credit for the way in which he's taken, you know, Pete Carroll's defense, who and it will always be the head coach's defense, but they are considerably better than they were last year.
with less high-profile headline names as well. I mean, there's people, John Reed, we mention every week at this point, is stepping up. He's taking on double teams and just closing down any running lanes, getting to the quarterback. It's a pretty impressive knock. As well, obviously, defensively, though, Bobby Wagner, yet again, had the big headline play on Monday night when he jumped over the line of scrimmage and blocked the field goal. I mean, a lot's being made of that. We'll probably get onto that a bit later as well. But he is, I mean, I think Ben Bob was just posted an article up on The Athletic for his Defensive Player of the Year campaign should pick up some steam. And the numbers do seem pretty heavy in Bobby Wagner's favour, but he is just the greatest, isn't he?
Yeah, I think he's probably the defensive player in the league that the team would have the most wins and loss difference if he wasn't playing. If he wasn't playing, we're at 8 wins. We might be on 4 or 5 by now, because Minnesota, Carolina, Green Bay, Detroit, he was just phenomenal in all 4 of them, as well as all the other games we've played this year as well. He's just playing to a different level.
Everything the defense is doing well over the last 6 weeks is, it all comes back in the root cause of it, is number 54, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's the center of the whole field, the center of the team, and his ability to break up so much in pass coverage. He's getting sacks. He's obviously sideline to sideline speed rushing is unrivaled in the league, and he's just pretty much the perfect modern middle linebacker.
He definitely is. Obviously, a lot of people are talking about Darius Leonard over in Indianapolis as Rookie of the Year, and he could be the next one to come for Bobby's throne. But this like, especially the last 6 weeks, it has been absolutely incredible. We briefly mentioned though, the Shaquille Griffin. He sort of appeared to. I think I tweeted Mike Dugar when he tweeted out piece about Shaquille Griffin last week. Pete Carroll seemed to like nudge him under the bus slightly after how he played the last few weeks, but he was back to how he was in the first 2-3 weeks of the season when his breakup on the sideline on third down before the field goal to Adam Thielen is the recovery speed is just incredible from Shaq, Adam.
Yeah, it was brilliant. You know, he jumped the route really well, and it looked, you know, it's a bit of a trite and easy comparison to make, but it looked very similar to the other dreadlocked cornerback that we've had playing on that side of the field for so many years in the past. It just looked like it was a natural fit on that field.
It did. Offensively, though, it wasn't all sweetness and light. Russell Wilson throwing for just 70 yards, lowest passing yard total for a team win in over 20 years. 10 completions, 20 attempts, 72 yards, and possibly the worst interception of his career, Adam.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that interception quite a lot, and as bad as obviously, I mean, it looks awful, but ultimately, if you're going to take a sack, you might as well try and throw it away, either get it out of bounds or not. I mean, it's obviously horrific, but it would be 25,000 worse if there were 3 minutes to go in the first quarter. I mean, given the fact there are only 6 seconds to go, ultimately the drive is dead as soon as he gets manhandled there. And I guess he's just trying to throw it out of bounds if he can, just to, you know, keep 2 seconds on the clock for a field goal or whatever. So, yeah, in isolation, it's one of the worst plays you've ever seen, ever. It's kind of almost butt fumble-esque. But in the context of the game, I kind of get why he threw it, even though he got a bit lucky that Kendricks fell over.
Yeah, that's the interception. If Kendricks makes a clean catch on that ball, it's 6 for Minnesota, which probably will have compounded it more. Someone's pointed out, that's the same play that was the 2-point conversion in the championship game against Green Bay. It's exactly the same. Nick Vanette and Lockett plays. It's exactly the same. Actually, there's just no misreading of a throw, wild throw in the air by Clinton Dix. It's exactly the same play, isn't it?
Also, sadly, it's exactly the same formation as the pick in 49.
Is it? Oh yeah, yeah, it would be. Yeah, oh yeah, yeah, that's slightly. Yeah, well, at least that play wasn't on Daryl Bevel then, was it? he's long gone. Well, elsewhere for your offense, Chris Carson yet again led the way, 22 rushes for 90 yards. A couple of weeks ago, we heard that Chris Carson wasn't going to jump over players anymore, and Rashad Penny wasn't going to try and reverse field anymore, and they brought out the greatest hits 2 weeks later. I don't mean the jump from Carson wasn't as headline worthy as his one in Carolina a couple of weeks ago, but he still did it. And the Rashad Penny ran, it says 44 yards, but he probably ran that and more on that run across the field, because he's going to be a running back, I think. He's, as I said a couple of weeks ago, he's not going to be the north-south one. He's the running back who's going to get you off your seat, isn't he, Rashad Penny?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you don't want him to do it, and he knows well that he probably shouldn't do it as regularly, but at least what you can say is every time he's made that type of run, yeah, it's worked. So I guess the awareness is there that he kind of knows when it's possible to do it. It's really exciting. And, you know, as soon as you can kind of see that there's five guys on one side of the field and he's running away from them, it's, you know, you're off your seat because you know that there's only five other guys or six other guys that can tackle him. And he's running a million miles an hour out the way. But we did say that if he can stay untouched and run in a straight line, he's obviously a very good running back, and he's finding a way to do it, albeit running around in circles for about 7 or 8 minutes before he gets a chance to do that.
And the one offensive touchdown on the night on the receiving end, Doug Baldwin was inactive with, is it groin or hip this week, Adam? With Doug? Was it groin, I think, wasn't it? Yeah,
I think it was.
In his absence, only Tyler Lockett had more than one catch on Wilson's double digit day. 5 catches for 42 yards. Nick Manette was the only other guy to hit double figures in receiving yards with 12 off his one catch. Doug Baldwin is a massive loss, and is a 40 point difference in Russell Wilson's quarterback rating this season when Doug Baldwin has missed a game or not played a part in a certain part of a game. A 40 point difference is a pretty hefty difference for Russell Wilson, isn't it?
Yeah, it's also completely not surprising because he's by far the best wide receiver we've got. He's the only one really that you can guarantee can get separation. And when you're trying to do play action, you need that desperately. Otherwise, it just becomes pretty easy to stop. I would be shutting him down for the playoffs now. I can't see any reason why you would play him for the next 3 weeks. You know, give him a nice break. And then he can be back for Chicago or Dallas in January. Whether they'll do that, you know, it's not really Pete Carroll way to think forward like that. But it seems a complete no-brainer to do that. Nothing can be gained really from him playing right now.
The only thing, I think Bob Condotta might mention this yesterday, the only thing about doing that is that if he doesn't play now until, what, January 9th, I think, 8th, the game, he wouldn't have played for 6 weeks, and that's a long time to sit out. So I think they will do that with certain players. I think DJ Fluke is probably a good candidate for that. You've seen even yesterday the injury report, a lot of niggles appearing. Now the playoff spot is, what, 98-99% assured. That might be something we see over the next few weeks. But I think they'll try and get Doug Baldwin out there, if not on a pitch count, as he was against Arizona a few months ago. I think that's what we'll see, because it's sitting out for 6 weeks and then being in the cauldron that is NFL playoff football is a tough thing to get your legs, even for someone as experienced with all the know-how and skills, Doug Baldwin, it would be a tough ask, wouldn't it?
I actually don't agree. I know why you're saying, and you're probably not wrong, and your logic is probably more sound than mine. But if we're talking about going from, you know, you got a big game in week 8, so let's miss, you know, week 6 and 7 off the back of it, you never know what's going to happen afterwards. But ultimately, the playoffs is going to be shit or bust. And I don't think we can possibly win a playoff game without him based on the quality of opposition we're going to have. And, you know, he's a guy that, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong and just looking at Kapit the wrong way. But for me, I would so much rather he got a full rest, and then, even if he was active for the Cardinals game, so he got a full week of practice then and was on the sidelines, maybe had 2 or 3 plays just to get him going. But I don't know. The thought of playing in the playoffs without him really gives me the creeps, and so I'd probably err on the side of caution there, even if it wouldn't be common wisdom to do that.
That's fair enough. But I would.
Nice for us to disagree on the podcast
people,
for once.
People may enjoy it.
Fans will be loving it.
Elsewhere on defense, on the defensive side, Frank Clark is, as I put on our group chat, every time he makes a tackle or a play, John Schneider might be crying because it just goes up a few extra 100,000 to $1 million, doesn't it? Every time he makes a play, he's going to be a rich man come March, isn't he?
Well, certainly with the news of the salary cap going up to $187 to $191 million.
I don't think he's going to be a rich man just yet, because I think he's going to get franchise tagged, and then that's going to cause us a bit of bother going to next season.
Well, if he's on a franchise tag, it's still $18 million.
Yeah, I mean, look, yeah, you have to say he's not poor if you've got $18 million in the bank. But in terms of the, you know, what I imagine he's looking for, that's a contract in the region of $80 million when all said and done. Would that be about right?
Yeah.
I would say that would be the splash figure. Probably, that's not his full guarantees, but if you're thinking that he's, yeah, you know, 5 year, $80 million, something like that contract, maybe even more, for your, something along those lines, I think that's going to have to wait a year or so, because I can't see them coming to an arrangement with him being so comfortable to play on the franchise tag. We know he's got his career insurance against that if necessary. But it'll be interesting to see if he is actually interested in doing a deal, or if he knows full well he's going to wait 18 months and really hit the open market properly.
Yeah, it will be interesting to watch. With the raise in salary cap coming, the Celtics have, according to people who know more about it than I do and have looked at the numbers, the Celtics will have between $55 and $58 million in salary cap space as free agency and all that opens in March. And as we said last week,
is that assuming Earl Thomas doesn't re-sign?
I think that's just how they stand at, like, day one, 2019 league year, I think. So, okay. As we said last couple of weeks, there's some big banner names who also play Frank Clark's position, entering free agency, especially Dunbain, Chelsea, Javon Clowney, and DeMarcus Lawrence, who could be someone that Frank Clark follows, who bet on himself this past offseason, took the franchise tag, signed the franchise tag, and had 12 and a half sacks again, and he's going to cost Dallas or someone a hell of a lot of money. So that could be the path that Frank Clark decides to go down this offseason. Overall, though, it was a pretty solid win. The Seahawks now 899 or 98%, depending on what website and mathematics you use to make the NFC playoffs. They are also 84% chance probability of being the fifth seed. Outside of that, after their overtime win at home against the Eagles, the Dallas Cowboys are 74% probability to be the number four seed, which makes it all likely and time to get on Skyscanner and Kayak and the rest of it. But this is, I mean, we faced the beat the Cowboys in Seattle back in week three for the first win of this season. But this is a different Seahawks. It's also a different Dallas Cowboys with the addition of just one player, Adam.
Oh, I mean, that game's going to be a complete mother. The only thing you can say is that probably the worst home field atmosphere you could get in terms of intimidation would be that one. So that maybe give us a slight advantage, and I'd much rather go there than play in the freezing cold in Chicago, even if we are as a team nicely set up to, you know, to run the ball, which is what you'd need to do over there. But yeah, I mean, it's going to be tough either way.
Jack Levens opined on Twitter yesterday, there's a good chance, and they're not going to admit it publicly either team, but there's a very good chance that they're already watching film on each other, aren't they?
Yeah. As well they should be. It would be madness to even, you know, pretend not to do that. The incredible thing is that we're going into week 15 and we're confident that the Seahawks have already qualified for the playoffs, which is just unbelievable,
the Seahawks
really.
Are just one win or one Vikings and Eagles loss, I believe, away from making the NFC playoffs in 2018, which is just quite remarkable from where we stood 2 weeks into this season on the back of a defeat in Chicago. Move on this week in week 15, I don't remember which week it was. The Seahawks travel down the West Coast to San Francisco and face Kyle Shanahan, Richard Sherman, and the San Francisco 49ers. So quickly talk on that.
Hi, this is Jessamyn McIntyre, and you're listening to the Pedestrian Podcast.
So yeah, not a lot of time or water has gone under the bridge since the last time the Seahawks played the 49ers. Same people on the field, same people making noise, and but all they did last week was face the Denver Broncos and their sky-high confidence on for that team and that defense especially, and put 20 points on the board in the first half, Adam. It was largely in part to George Kittle having half of the Bay Area to himself for some strange reason. It was a pretty impressive bounce back from what was a beatdown they suffered the week before in Seattle.
Yeah, they played really well. I mean, Denver didn't really seem that they were ready to play. And there's some reports post-game that would suggest that that might have been the case, that they didn't really turn up completely prepped. And what you would say about a Pete Carroll team is that any game that's, you know, you'd say maybe 10 o'clock kickoff on the East Coast, slightly different, but it's pretty rare that the Seahawks don't turn up to a game fully motivated and ready to play. So you have to hope that that wouldn't happen. Yeah, Kittle completely lost his head and went absolutely mad. Mullins is tidy at best, yeah. You'd say. Obviously, because last time, but a lot of that was in garbage time when it looked fairly false. You know, it's false yardage, really. But also, the Broncos had plenty of opportunities to claw that back. And I think on two or three occasions in the second half, got shut down, fourth down. So I think the Seahawks go into this game as strong favourites off the back of two excellent wins.
Yeah, I agree. But for the 49ers offense, Matt Breida, I don't think he's going to play this week. And it's all about George Kittle, who is skyrocketing up tight end ranks league-wide, isn't he? He looks a proper player. And the speed he showed on the second of his touchdowns on Sunday is something we don't see for many tight ends outside of New England, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly looks like he's in the kind of Gronk, Kelsey mold. He might even be the quickest of all of those guys after the catch. I mean, he really is rapid when he gets the ball in hand and turns towards the goal line. So he's going to take some stopping. But ultimately, you've got him and you've got Pettis. And after that, really, that there's not a lot else there that you should be overly concerned about stopping. So, you know, put two men on Kittle and see what else Mullins has got to beat you would be the way I'd say play it.
On Monday night, the Seahawks triple teamed at times, double teamed Thielen and Stephon Diggs in some pretty cool ways. I think Sam Gold on The Athletic pointed out they really did disguise a lot of things, which is very, it feels like it's uncommon for Pete Carroll to do defense. It's kind of, he just seems to be someone who's done the same defense for 25 years. You just have to beat it. But on Monday, he seemed to, him or Norton, whoever installs the play sheets, kind of seemed to change it up a bit for probably the best wide receiver duo outside of Brown and Juju, isn't it? Thielen and Diggs?
Certainly, yeah. Up there. If someone says you they're the best, you couldn't really say, nah, nonsense. You'd have to at least give that opinion at the time of day.
It was quite impressive to see how they kind of did trying to change things up on the coverage side of it, wasn't it, with those two?
Yeah, for sure. It was lockdown stuff, and it was great to see, and it helps that their quarterback, and I'm going to say it because I just pissed off with him and his annoying face, Kirk Cousins is rubbish. Right, but that's okay. It.
I was told a few weeks ago that I just like set you up for your insane ramblings, and I think that's kind of what actually happens on this pod.
Did someone say that? What? Insane ramblings or inane ramblings? Because either one would probably be correct.
It's definitely ramblings. It's kind of just like, I just sit back and just enjoy the ride.
Well, whoever said that, I mean, out the tout, really. You really, if you had any self-respect, you'd tell me who that was.
I will after we've recorded.
okay, fine.
But yeah, so yeah, that kind of fits. For Seahawks offense, running the ball is what they want to do. As many like crew pointed out numerous times on Monday, they have the highest percentage of plays which are run plays, and that is probably going to be the case for ever more, isn't it? Especially on Sunday, and it's probably going to be effective on Sunday because it was 2 weeks ago, Adam.
It's effective, it's deathly boring, and it's a concern if it doesn't work, which you'd have to say in the first three quarters. You know, if you've not scored a touchdown until 2 minutes to go in a game, I would struggle to say that the offense is clicking or working. But, you know, ultimately you've ended up with 21 points and a win. So, and look, that's the way they're going to play it. So as much as we can moan about it and, you know, say you want to be a bit more expansive, they're not going to be. So we might as well just suck it up and go with it and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, there seems to be the groundswell under Brian Schottenheimer. We seem to mention it every week. I mean, he's improved over the course of the season, but he still has his annoying traits, doesn't he? I mean, it's exactly the same as what Bevel had for a lot of people, apart from me. And I think it's vice versa with Schottenheimer. Everyone else seems to just be on board. And I'm kind of like, eh. Where last year it was, I loved Arrow Bevel, and everyone's like, "Yeah, is that fair?"
I'd say it's a great comparison, and it's almost identical to Bevel, but Bevel didn't really do the job that Carroll ever wanted him to after the first Super Bowl win, and Schottenheimer ultimately is just a lapdog who's doing exactly what the head coach wants him to do, which is why he's being, well, some may say successful, others may say otherwise, but the reason that he'll stick around for a long time is that he's doing exactly the job that Pete Carroll wants him to do, for better or for worse, as a fan.
And it's effective, which is obviously he could do the job Pete wants him to do, and he was in the first 2 weeks, and it wasn't effective. Confidence, score prediction, Adam?
100-0. No.
That would be Scorigami again as well. So.
I'm going to go 27-13, Seattle.
Okay, I'm going to go, I think I've got 33-16. I think that's what I did last time, 33-40, I don't know. I think it'd be confident, but all that being on the road will probably take off a touchdown, probably, wasn't it?
Yeah, and I think their fans will be fairly motivated. They've not beaten us since the Gulf War. Agincourt was the one that they've not beaten us since. So, you know, you'd imagine that you'll have half an hour of their fans being a little bit excited in their kind of mugginess. And then hopefully we'll have enough that we can kind of silence that and just move on and get on with the game and come home healthy.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. One more thing on the 49ers. Kyle Shanahan was mic'd up on Sunday. It was really cool how instantly he knew where players would go if they're going for touchdowns and that. As soon as the ball snapped on the Dante Pettis one, I think he told Mullins, if X is covered, go Pettis. And he did, and he just immediately goes, got it. And it was a touchdown. I don't know why it's impressive, because the amount of work they put in, but it was impressive all the same. And he does remain one of the better offensive coaches in the league as well, doesn't he?
He's great. And more fool the 49ers if they ever get rid of him, because there will be a host of teams that are desperate to pick him up.
So obviously we'll be back next week before the Sunday night game, which appears to be staying on Sunday night against the Kansas City Chiefs back in Seattle in week 16. But before we wrap up, let's have a quick spin in the bin, shall we?
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, this week there are a few nominations, also a few honourable mentions for certain people over in Seattle. But Adam, you said you had someone this week. I told you not to tell me until we were recording. So the floor is yours for this week's GITB.
Well, this is a slightly strange one, because I'm going to put this person in the bin, but I'm also going to laud him for a quite magnificent prediction going into the season. And get in the bin. Adam Nathan. Adam Nathan, yours truly deserves to go in the bin for the prediction that the Cleveland Browns would have more wins than the Seattle Seahawks this year. Now, the only reason that's wrong is that the Seahawks have been much, much, much better than I expected. But what a man I am for predicting the Cleveland Browns to have the season they've done. I knew it was coming, and they're going to go into week 17 in the playoff hunt. They're not going to make it, but the way that it breaks down, it's not beyond the realms of possibility they could make it. And they're always a team we look on fondly on the Pedestrian podcast. And so even though my overall prediction, a real hot takey one, in fairness, hasn't come to light, they've managed to make me feel like I have half an idea what's going on, at least about another team, if not my own. Which is a bit of a problem, because I podcast about the one I obviously have not got a clue about. So, one of those things.
Yeah, watching Baker Mayfield and listening to Baker Mayfield may be a bit more entertaining than Russell Wilson at times. So maybe we should try that 1 week. Fair enough. My get in the bin is someone who made a bit of a boo-boo in Miami on Sunday, Sunday evening. Bill Belichick is often lauded as a genius, rightly so. He's probably, he's top three NFL coaches all time. He's definitely the best coach, most adaptable coach in this league by quite some distance. He is incredible. But what he saw on game film for the last 6 or 7 years of Ryan Tannehill throwing an American football that made him think Ryan Tannehill could throw the ball 75 yards to the point where he put Rob Gronkowski back as a deep safety, I would love to know. Because Rob Gronkowski being on that field ended up costing the Patriots that play. Obviously, the play is insane, wild, and incredible. And if you get a chance, try and find the Patriots radio call of it, because we can hear the co-commentator go, oh, Jesus, when Kenyon Drake turns the corner. But if a safety is where Gronkowski is, if they have another DB on the field, that is not a touchdown. But Gronkowski is so, it's basically just held together by string at this point. It's just, I don't understand what Bill Belichick was doing, what he saw. And it's just a rare misstep for the thing. And because of that, because of just getting, it's probably a bit harsh, all the goodwill he's probably built up for everything else he's done as a coach. But yeah, Bill Belichick can get in the bin, Adam.
I can't disagree with you there, but it's been great for the playoff run in the AFC. I mean, that is incredibly exciting. So many teams look like they could make it. It's fantastic. Yeah. One other thing that can get right in the bin, and you yourself, dear listener, can get right in the bin if you like it as well, those Action Green uniforms are an absolute disgrace. They are the worst things I've ever, 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 ever seen. And Arsenal play in red, and it's still worse than that. It is they are beyond abysmal.
Well,
if it was black with neon green lines and numbers, that would be good. Even if the trousers were blue, but all of it being lime green, it looks like the stick of nuclear waste that Homer puts into his pocket by mistake when he leaves work in the open for The Simpsons. It's just abysmal.
It looks like the thing that the train people in New York pulled off the 7 train track. Have you seen that picture? There's a massive waste disposal thing, and it is the same colour. And people want to know where they got it from, what the hell it is, because they dredged it out of one of the subways in New York. It's disgusting. I think it's the J train track. They dredged it out of that, and it looks disgusting. That's what it looks like. But I've got to say, at the same time, our friend Mike Dugas set up, was it the Action Green Foundation or something over the weekend? People who all love and support the wearing of the green uniforms. I think I'm probably more of a member of that than I am opposed to it. I'm not really that bothered, to be quite honest. Because my soccer team, City, were famous for wearing chocolate brown, and every Cov fan loves that chocolate brown kit. You ask us, well, that's you. Your dad, if he saw that at a match of the day, that it was not popular outside of the city limits of Coventry, but in Coventry it is held in a weird high regard. And there was talk that we're going to wear it this weekend, but I don't think they are.
To have a uniform that much worse than Wolf Grey, it really has to be a bad uniform.
I don't understand what... I know there's helmet stuff, but I don't understand why they don't wear the throwbacks. The throwbacks are so popular.
Yeah.
You walk around the Seattle, you walk around the Pro Shop, you walk around London, and they were everywhere. The Mitchell & Ness range that they have now is so, so cool. It is a bit hipsterish, I guess, at the same time, but I don't understand why they don't wear the throwbacks more often. Although black with green, that does sound nice.
Now that would be a uniform.
Yeah, and obviously there is honourable mentions to anyone in Seattle media who weirdly celebrating every time Richard Sherman may be proved wrong or not, and are just weirdly defensive of Pete Carroll, and got called out on it by former players, rightly so as well. And they just seem to be... I don't know. It's just really annoying. And the whole of Seahawks, like yesterday, we recorded this on Thursday. On Wednesday, Seahawks Twitter lost their mind because Russell Wilson showed a bit of human emotion to this week's Cable Thanos video. And then they just went after Benjamin Albright, who made a prediction. It's a prediction. He wasn't saying, this is what's going to happen, bet this, bet that. He was sharing an opinion. And he got hounded for it. I think he said his mother got hounded for it. I mean, what is that about?
Well, we know that they are
a lot of those people are full-time members. You know, they're not quite in the suite level of Hugh Jackson, but they've got at least a double room for themselves inside the bin. So this comes as no surprise that they would do that. And without wanting to be too disappointing, I don't think that's Russell Wilson that's tweeting.
No, I did think that, to be quite honest. Because we
of the videos are sensational.
Yes, but we've been in a room with a Hall of Famer who takes a picture of us and then sends it to somewhere else, and then 15 minutes later it appears on his social media. So I'm pretty certain that's the case. And also, if Russell Wilson is seeing tweets from someone called Cable Thanos on Twitter and those amazing videos, do you not think he sees all the nonsense you wrote about him over the off-season as well? Did you not think about that? All the trade Russell Wilson, he's not doing this, repeat, he's not doing that, he's doing this, he's doing that. If he sees a video, which has been around for, what, 5 weeks? I think he's five, six he's done. He'd have seen 6 months' worth of you chatting shit, basically, about him, wouldn't he?
But no. I think you're probably right.
It's a weird protection, a weird thin-skinned nature of certain people, and it's just really annoying. All over Seahawks, Twitter, Facebook, all the fandom, really, but especially on Twitter over the last 48, 72 hours or so since the game on Monday night. But the Seahawks game on Monday night against the Vikings was at the end of what was, Adam, a ridiculously wild Sunday night in the NFL.
I think it was the best Sunday night of football I can remember. There were about five or six games that all went down to the last second that were all, or, you know, the last drive and something was going on. And you were just gripped to your seat. Gripped to your seat. That's two things put together. glued to your seat. You were glued to your seat for the whole evening. It was 7 hours commercial free football, as Scott Hansen says. It was one of those where you literally watched 7 hours of commercial free football because you couldn't take your eyes off it.
Yeah, and there was two overtimes, three or four fourth quarter comebacks. There was kickers slipping over. There was obviously the miracle of Miami. There was
Baltimore against Kansas,
where they were fourth and nine or fourth and 19. Mahomes, but Patrick Mahomes did a Ronaldinho on an NFL field. He's the greatest. It was incredible, and I was at work. And then, most of it.
I mean, even games like Cleveland against Carolina, 26-20 or whatever. That's an amazing game.
It's in Carolina.
No, in Cleveland.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, it was ridiculous. And then the Sunday night game was the antithesis to what the Rams' last primetime game was. And Mitch, I mean, you're probably not going to get two worst quarterback performances on a primetime game as what Goff and Trubisky trotted out on Sunday night, but it doesn't matter when you're thrown. Actually, before we're talking about that, that Sunday night game had another edition of how Tom Cable misused offensive linemen, didn't it? Bradley Salk should have been a goal line tight end, Adam.
Him or George Fant, either of the two of them are going to be the next Megatron.
Pete Carroll's comment is that George Fant almost scored. also, I do think George Fant has been slightly let down by the yardage people, because he made the first down on that run. He's got one catch for 9 yards, but if you watch, he isn't touched until he slides past the yardage marker. So yeah, he's owed at least two more yards. That could be the difference between just being an also ran offensive lineman tight end and Hall of Famer, couldn't it?
Certainly so. Yeah, I mean, if David Moore's next in line for the Hall of Fame, you have to think that Fant is only moments away from his gold jacket being delivered.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is what happens with 2018 season goes a lot better than we all expected. So if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can on all the usual means.
Please do get in touch with the podcast. It's so great when you guys interact and send questions or tell us that you're listening. And even if you say you're in the bath listening, we like to know about it, so do let us know where you're listening and what's going on.
Yeah, you can do that on the pedestrianpodcast.podbean.com, on Twitter at Seahawkers UK, Facebook is UK Seattle Seahawks fans, Instagram is UK Seahawkers, the website is ukseahawkers.com. It should have been announced, I think it already has been, just been posted by Al Presidente, Sean Wilson. The 2019 UK Seahawkers National Meet will be in Newcastle, in the centre of Newcastle, on the 18th of May 2019. To Gordon, both the Gordons up in Scotland, wishing them the best for their fourth or fifth annual Glasgow Scottish Meet at Van Winkle's barbecue pit in the centre of the city to watch the game this Sunday. And then obviously Super Bowl Sunday in Birmingham, which, oof, are we getting nervous about? at O'Neill's on Broad Street in Birmingham on the 3rd of February. It will kick off from about 8 o'clock for the game, which I think is kicking off at 10:45 or 10:30. I'm not too sure. Yeah, there's still a few spaces left. I think there's about 15 to 20 spaces left for that, and so we have to beg and plead for more room to the management team at O'Neill's. All that information is on the Facebook or the Twitter, as well as mentioned previously. But enjoy the game from wherever you, whatever corner of the globe you watch it. And until next time, this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks.
George, man, how about that? He almost scored. That's how he saw it. Gosh, if I just didn't slip, I'd have scored. Yeah, it's good. He's been playing a lot of snaps for us and done a great job at blocking for us, and he's run some routes and all that. But I don't know if you saw the sidelines. They went crazy to see George catch the ball. But he didn't quite get all the yards that were there. Maybe next time.